Numbers chapter 20, beginning at verse 7. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes. And it, the rock, shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts to drink. Well, Moses, verse 9, took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, Hear now, you rebels, or you morons, as we talked about last Sunday, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice. And the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. In our study last Sunday, we looked at this text, and we saw how this story proved to be the biggest blunder in Moses' ministry. He was told to speak to the rock, that the rock then might bring forth water to satiate the thirst of the congregation as they're wandering in the wilderness. And perhaps you recall how Moses blew it. Instead of speaking to the rock, in anger, he smote the rock, and he called the people rebels, or morons, literally. And because he misrepresented the nature of God, for God was not angry with the people, he was not mad at the people, he was not disappointed in the people, but because Moses misrepresented the nature of the Father, God said to Moses, Moses, because of that blunder, you will be unable to lead the people into the land of promise. Because you see, that's what happens. The wrath of man, James 1 declares, worketh not the righteousness of God. And when I am angry at people and lash out at people and come down on people in a way that misrepresents how the Lord feels about folks, I lose my ability to lead effectively. I lose my authority if I'm misrepresenting the nature of the Father, you see. And we talked about that at length last Sunday. If you weren't here and you're interested in that, you can pick up the tape. And you can see the disaster that Moses was caught up in when he smote the rock with the rod and the buds and the almonds fell off. The fruit of that rod was lost in a moment of anger, misrepresenting the nature and character of the Father, and thus his authority was diminished. His ability to lead the people was hindered, and he would not be able to lead them in. For applications and understandings of that particular application of the story, pick up the tape. But today, I want us to look at the story again from another angle, from a different perspective that has tremendous application to you and to me. I want us to look at the story from the perspective of the rock that was smitten. You see, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4 says specifically, this rock that supplied water, that followed them in the wilderness, was Christ. He is the rock of our salvation. He was the one that was smitten. And out of his side came water and blood. The rock is a picture of Christ, a type of Christ, an illustration of Christ, a model of Christ. The rock that followed them, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, was Christ, you see. And I want you to see something here and think through with me something. And that is when this rock was smitten wrongly. For you see, God said to Moses, just speak to the rock, and it will bring forth its water. But Moses, in his frustration, in his anger, in his fatigue and whatever, he wrongly smote the rock. What did the rock do when it was wrongly smitten? Did the rock clam up? Did the rock go dry? Did the rock hold back? No. The rock, even though it was wrongly smitten at this time, abused, if you would, the rock still brought forth refreshment for the congregation and for Moses and Aaron as well. Now this interests me. Because you see, the rock is Christ. And listen to what Peter has to say. I'll read it to you. You can jot it down. I hope you take notes. And if you do, jot this down and look it up later or jot it in your margin. Because in 1 Peter chapter 2, it says this. For what glory is it, verse 20, if when you were buffeted or beaten, smitten, for your own faults that you take it patiently. That's no big deal. If you're beaten or buffeted or smitten because you blew it, because you deserve to be beaten, what glory is that? There's no glory in that. You deserve it. But when you do well and suffer for it, and you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his footsteps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, beaten on verbally, reviled not again. When he suffered physically, he threatened not, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20 through 23 tells you and me that Christ is our example and that we get to follow in his footsteps when people buffet you or beat me unfairly. When they bruise us and smite us and beat us, we are to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, who didn't beat back, who didn't lash out, but rather endured. Even as when he was on the cross, beaten and buffeted, out came from his side blood, redemption, and water, refreshment. So too, we are to follow in his example as well. We are to do what Jesus did. What did Jesus do? I know a lot of us wear bracelets or have t-shirts that say, what would Jesus do? WWJD. That's wonderful. But in this case, in instances where we wonder what to do, perhaps a better question would be, what did Jesus do? WDJD. What did Jesus do when he was beaten? What happened when Jesus was beaten? Here we see in the story of Numbers 20, the rock that was beaten unfairly, uncalled for, unrighteously, still gave refreshment to the congregation and to the one who beat him, Moses and Aaron. What do you do when you're having a bad day? That's the question I want to ask to you and present to you today. What do you do when you're getting beat up? When people are beating on you? Everybody has days like that occasionally, where you just have a bad day. You get beat up. My wife had one on Wednesday. Riding her bike, she rides this bicycle. She's real speedy. She's real fit, and she rides this bike. She goes 20, 30 miles at a pop, and she rides this bike, you know, and she goes real fast, and she was down by Foodland in Medford, and she was riding her bike, and she hit something on the side of the road, and she flew over the top of her bike and landed on her head, and she wasn't wearing a helmet. And so she lands on the back of her head. She was going real fast and flew over the top and hit her head, and blood's pouring out. And And she kind of is in shock, and she's wobbling around, and she sits there on the sidewalk, and a guy drives by and says, "Lady, your sunglasses are still on the street." And he keeps on going, and here blood is just pouring down her head. And Tammy was dazed and in shock, so she walks out in the middle of traffic not looking to get her sunglasses. This guy says, "Lady, your sunglasses are still on the street," and she hears that, and she's dazed, and she walks out there. She could have got run over. And then she goes back and she's kind of woozy and she sits down on the grass, and a guy walks by that lived there and gave her a dirty look because she was sitting on the grass of the home and blood is just covering her shirt and all the rest, you know. And you wonder about things like that. And then a wonderful sister saw her and brought her into her home and went to the hospital, and she got, I got to see her skull. You know, I got to see Tambo's skull. They numbed it up, you know, to put the stitches in and to sew it back up again. And they you could see the skull. And so they numbed it up. So now she is officially a numb skull. Sorry, honey. I couldn't resist it. No. I mean, her whole head was opened up, you know, and they sewed it up and did the thing and all the rest. And for the next few days, she was a bit woozy, to say the least, and kind of nauseous and all the rest, because that's a real blow. And you know, what do you do when you're just riding along through a day, going along, everything is hunky-dory, and then suddenly you're topsy-turvy, and you land on your head, and people walk by or drive by and don't understand, and don't get it, and pass by when you're hurting. What do you do when you have a day like that? And we all do. Maybe not physically, but emotionally. Relationally. Perhaps even spiritually. We have those kinds of days where we are beaten, where we are bruised, where we are battered, where we are bloodied. What do we do? You see. Well, Jesus shows us. He, Peter says, is your example when you are being buffeted, when you are being smitten. Look at Jesus. Learn from Jesus. Follow in Jesus' footsteps, you see. He gives us the key. See, when he was butchered and battered and beaten and bloodied and bruised, he was able to take a very bad day and turn it into a good one. It's called not Bad Friday, it's called Good Friday. We would say that should be called Bad Fried Day. You know, when Jesus got fried, when he was beaten and butchered and badgered and all the rest, what a mess, what a bloody mess, we would say. But Jesus was able to take a bad fried day and turn it into what we call Good Friday. What did he do? I want to talk to you. I want to share with you. I want you to pick up on the example of our Master, to see what we get to do, what we got to do, what we're going to do when we have a bad day. How to make a bad day a good one. When you're being beaten up and bruised and bloodied, what do you do? What did Jesus do? Seven things he did on the cross that I want you to jot down. I want you to take note of. I want you to be aware of. Because Jesus shows us, when he was beaten, when the rock was smitten, when the people were angry and hostile like Moses was that day, "We will not have this man rule over us. Away, away, away with him. Crucify him." Jesus was taken away and beaten up. And what did he do to make a bad one a very good day? First of all, listen to what he said. Number one, "Father," he said, while he was being beat up and bloodied, "Father," he said, "forgive them. They don't know what they do." This is the first key of how to take a bad day and turn it into a good one when people are beating up on you unfairly. Number one, pray for them. "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." Jesus said specifically in the Sermon on the Mount here in Luke chapter 6, Jesus declared to us, or pardon me, chapter 5, love your enemies, verse 44. Bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. When people beat on you, abuse you, persecute you, Jesus said, don't curse them, don't blast them, but pray for them. Why? Jesus gives the key. Father, he does just that for those that are around him, spitting on him, hurling curses at him. Father, he prays for them. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They don't understand. We need to remember when a person beats on us that they're sinners, just like you and just like me. And sinners, listen carefully, it's a key component of biblical theology. Sinners are not sinners because they sin. They sin because they're sinners. Sinners are not sinners because they sin. They sin because they're sinners. What do you mean? That's mumbo jumbo. No. It's stating that man is born a sinner. He's not a sinner because he sins. He sins because he's born a sinner. Man is depraved. You and me, your neighbor, your boss, your spouse, we're all a bunch of sinners. And that's why Jesus was able to pray compassionately, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They're sinners. You can't blame a sinner for sinning. Do you understand that? And this is where we as believers often get mixed up. We try to get the world, sinners, to clean up their act, to be nice, to do good. It's as I've said so many times before, it's like trying to catch a fish before you, or pardon me, clean a fish before you catch it. You can't clean a fish before you catch it. Sinners can't be cleaned up before they're caught. You see, by the Son of God, and saved and born again and made into a new man. They can't help it. Oh, people are made in the image of God. It's true. But they're sinners too. Kind of like that comic strip, Peanuts. You see Lucy in frame one looking at Snoopy. Sometimes you really bug me, she says to Snoopy. Frame two. But sometimes I just want to come up and give you a great big hug. Frame three. Snoopy says, that's me, huggable and buggable. And that's people. Huggable and buggable. That's people. We see good things in them because they're made in the image of God. But we see things that bug us greatly because, just like you and me, they've been polluted by sin. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They're sinners. They're ignorant. You know, I truly do believe that if we could see the secret heartaches and hurts of our worst enemy, he would no longer be. That is, he or she would no longer be an enemy. If we could really see into their secret hurts and heartaches, where they've been, what they've gone through, what makes them the way that they are. See, Jesus got through that. He understood these people that are spitting on me, cursing at me, causing great pain in me. They don't understand what they're doing. Father, forgive them. This is the first thing that I must do when I am being beat up and bruised and battered. I must pray for the people that are inflicting the pain. Because if I do, my heart toward them will change. Not only will they change because God answers prayer, but more importantly, it will change me. Don't curse, don't gossip, don't bemoan, don't groan. Pray. That's what Jesus said, and that's what Jesus did. Father, forgive them. The second thing that Jesus did in turning a bad day into a good one was not only praying for those that were beating him up, and causing him pain. But the second thing he did that's interesting to me from that cross is he turned to a man on one side of him who was dying right there, a thief, and said, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." The second thing I've got to do, I get to do, I'm going to do when I'm having a bad day is to think about heaven. Without that, hey, life will be miserable and tedious and unbearable. That's why Jesus said to us in John 14, "Don't let your heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also." You got to think about heaven. See, that person who's being mean to me, who's causing pain in me, hey, if they're not saved, I have to realize not only are they a sinner, but this life, for them, this is the best it's ever going to be. So I'm not going to sue them or retaliate against them or come down on them or get mad at them, because if he's not a believer, if she's not a believer, this world is the best it's ever going to be. But for me and for you, we are going to heaven. This is the worst it's ever going to be for us. And when Jesus was on that cross, he turned to that man. And as the book of Hebrews says, who for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. The joy set before him. Heaven is such an important foundational key to being happy on earth. To enduring when you're being beat up by other folks. You got to remember heaven. That person who's beating you up, hey, let him go. Let it die. This is the best it's ever... Well, yeah, but the person that's beating up on me is a Christian, you say. Well, then God will judge him in that day. Paul says, don't judge another man's servant. Let the master judge his servant. And in that day, the Lord will sort it through and work it out. I don't have to worry about it. The Lord sees things I can't and knows things I don't. And he will judge in that day. So it's heaven either way. I'm going there and the Lord will take care of it then if the person is a brother or a sister who's done me wrong. I don't have to worry about it now. And that makes life so wonderful. It really does. An analogy I often use is, you guys know what it was like on the last day of school in your senior year, right before graduation. You bring water balloons and throw them and squirt guns and shoot them. You're just enjoying the day. Why? Because, hey, we're out of here. We're through. Sayonara. Arrivederci. Adios. So long. Goodbye. We're gone. I'm embarrassed to say, but in our school at Del Mar, when I graduated, we took a bunch of pigeons and fed them a bunch of bread that was soaked in Ex-Lax, and we had all these pigeons, and we had a key to the dean's office and put the pigeons in the dean's office the night before graduation. After they had eaten the bread soaked in Ex-Lax, it was not a pretty sight. How could you guys do that? Last day of school. We're gone. We're out of there. You see, were other underclassmen are uptight about school tests and term papers and SATs and all the rest? Not us. Class of 71, we're done. We're gone. See, and that's the way that Jesus wants you to live. And that's why he, when he was being beat up, he said, today you're going to be with me in paradise. If I forget about heaven, I'm headed for depression. I've got to live every day saying, this could very well be the day when Jesus says, come up, and we're gone. See, it has been said, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. We say you can be no earthly good until you are heavenly minded. That's the truth. Because you'll be so bogged down in life, so mad at people, so bitter with folks. You got to live in light of eternity. Jesus did. Today, you'll be with me in paradise. Number three, what did he do to make a bad day a good one when he was being beat up, the rock smitten? The third thing he did on the cross was he looked down at his mom and he said, "Woman, behold thy son," as he nodded towards the apostle John. And he said to John, "Behold thy mother." He brought the family together. He brought the family. The third thing I'm going to do when I'm being beat up, bloodied, bruised, is I'm going to serve the family. The best way to forget about my troubles is to help someone else forget about theirs. I want to say that again. The best way for me to forget about my hurts and my pain and my bruises is to say I'm going to help somebody in the family forget about theirs. Jesus on the cross was dealing with the family. He got outside of himself, if you would, his own agony, his own pain at that moment, because he was concerned about his mother. Who was going to take care of her? Such a key, precious people. Such a key. Get out of yourself and think about the family. Serve others. That's what Jesus did. I find that in my experience, life is a lot like a tennis game. I was watching a tennis match a few days ago, and I was thinking about that, watching the score and the way it was going. And life is like a tennis game. Those who serve rarely lose. In a tennis game between two relatively equal competitors, it's a shock when the server loses his serve. That is, the server wins. And you see this battle going on between two tennis players, and it's unusual, it's surprising, it's shocking, it's terrible if you lose when you're serving. The point is, in this game of life, those who serve rarely lose. Those who serve rarely lose. Those who serve rarely lose. Jesus, he prayed, "Father, forgive them." First thing, they're sinners. They don't know what they're doing. Secondly, paradise is at hand. Today you'll be with me in heaven. He had that heavenly perspective before him. Thirdly, he was serving the family, taking care of others, you see. Number four, the fourth thing he said was, "I thirst. I thirst." See, I got to realize something. That when I am beaten, when I am bloodied, when I am badgered, when I am bruised, what I think to be wrongfully, unfairly, like the rock in our story, like Jesus on the cross ultimately, I need to remember something. Those things that pain me, it's what brings me back to the water of the Word and the wine of communion. People, you know this. You've seen it in your own life. You've seen it in others around you. When everything is hunky-dory, people have a tendency to not be in the water of the Word as much, or go to the table of the Lord and drink. A tea kettle doesn't sing if there's no hot water. We have this tea kettle in our kitchen. It's got this little whistle thing. And when the water boils, the tea kettle sings. And I found that to be so true. All too often, people don't sing. They're not there with intensity. We're not there seeking the Lord in the Word or coming to His table with desperation, with intensity, with passion, unless so frequently there's hot water. We're in hot water. There's problems. There's pain. There's difficulties. And when I'm in hot water, it will make me either bitter or better. It will make me better if I do what Jesus did. I thirst. I'm thirsty. Jesus said, "Blessed are you who hunger and thirst for righteousness. You shall be what? Filled." The church fills up when the Gulf War is taking place. People come out when their spouse walks out on them unexpectedly. People show up at believers' meetings on Sunday night when they've discovered that they have a serious illness. Why is that? Because I'm thirsty. And when people are being beat on and bloodied and badgered, there's a blessing. Because what it can do, if you don't let it make you bitter, it'll make you better because you'll be thirsting. I need to get in the Word. I need to be at the table. I'm thirsty. Notice what Jesus didn't do. They handed him some drugged solution, some vinegar with drugs to deaden the pain through drugs. Jesus didn't go there. Jesus didn't take that. Jesus didn't do such a thing. And I think it's a sad thing personally when people go to alcohol or to drugs in order to deaden the pain instead of going to the living water of the Word, going to the table of the Lord. I think it's a sad thing that people go to alcohol and drugs instead of going to the Lord. If any man thirst, come unto me, and out of his innermost being shall gush forth torrents of living water. This spake he of the what? Holy Ghost. Then Jesus said, as the day became oh so dark, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He didn't say Father. It's the only time that Jesus ever used that phrase in prayer to his Father, Elohim, my God. He didn't call him Father. Why? Because in that hour of darkness when he was being beaten, he suddenly felt oh so alone. He was hurting. The Father, if you would, turned his back on the Son. Darkness covered the earth. Jesus was all alone. No longer does he say Father because the relationship has been temporarily broken because he who knew no sin was made sin and the Father turned his back, for the Father cannot look on sin in that way. And Jesus absorbed my sin and yours too. And you'll feel that way, and I do, when you're really being beat up. There can come that moment when you say, God, where are you? My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Jesus experienced it, and so must you, and so must I, so must we. Why? I go through times when I feel unfairly picked on, unfairly beat up, unfairly treated by someone or something, big baby that I am. Maybe you go through that occasionally too. And maybe during those times you feel as though, oh my, God is far away. Where is he? This is a bad day. It's dark. Where is he? Keep in mind, precious people, when I feel that way and I go through those times that last for hours or days or weeks, and I've gone through them even longer than that, I come out of that time with an amazing awareness of how people that don't know the Lord live constantly. They never have fellowship with the Father. And when I come out of that season, that dark night of the soul, as it was dark on the earth when he was being beaten unfairly, my God, where are you? Why hast thou forsaken me? When you go through that and I go through that, what it does is we come out of it and we say, man, that's the way people that don't know Jesus live every day. Out of fellowship. And I forgot about it. I've been saved now for 3 years, you might say, or 10 years, or 12 years, or me, 44 years I've been saved. And I can forget, we can forget what it's like to be out of fellowship, where you don't know him. And God, in his loving kindness, occasionally will say to you, just like to Jesus that day, experience it once more. That you might have compassion for people next door. That you might have compassion for the people down the street. That you might have compassion for the person that drives by when there's blood on your shirt. That you might have compassion for the person who's being a jerk. Because let you feel again, the Lord would say, feel again what it's like to be in the darkness, out of fellowship with no relationship. And I come out and I say, Lord, I needed that. I needed that season, that hour, that day, to appreciate where people live their lives out there in the world that are not part of your family. They're stuck in darkness constantly. They're out of fellowship totally. They don't have you as their father personally. And they question, my God, where are you? Constantly. I need to embrace that dark night. Then Jesus said, we're almost done. What are we on, number six, aren't we? Five? We should be on six, I do believe. We should be on six. Father, forgive them. Prayed for those that were hurting him. Paradise, today you'll be with me in paradise. Think about heaven. On that bad day, you got to. Woman, behold thy son. Number three, taking care of the family. I thirst. Number four. Ouch. My fingers don't work so good. Number four. There it is, number four. That'll do it. I thirst, number four. Because when we go through those times, we are thirsting again for the water of the Word and the table of the Lord. It brings us back once more. Number five, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? That we might understand where people live constantly. Number six, it is what? Finished. I love this. It is finished. One of my favorite phrases in the Bible, yours too, is that phrase that appears over and over, and it came to what? Pass. It is finished, he said that day. It was a cry from a victor, not a victim. It was a shout of victory, not a whimper of agony. It is finished. It is finished. James 1 says this, brothers, count it all joy when you go through various trials. Knowing this, the testing of your faith works what? Patience. Let patience have its perfect work, that you may be entire and complete, lacking nothing. But he's beating on me. She's hurting me. They're mean to me. Okay, it'll pass. The test will pass. When? When you pass the test. I've been getting beat on day after week after month after year. When does this test? Let patience have her perfect work, that you may be complete and entire, lacking nothing. The test will pass when you pass the test. I'm tired of this test. Then pass it. Then become complete and entire. Don't excuse, well, that's just the way I am. I'm Irish, so I'm going to lose my temper. Or I'm just kind of a grumpy guy, so that's the way it's going to be. Don't make excuses, because the test will go on and on until you are perfect and complete, lacking what? Nothing. Jesus went through that, and he was determined to come on the other side of that. It is finished. The test is passed. And so, when I get beat up, I got to say, Lord, you have brought this person, those people, that situation into play because there's something terribly lacking in me. And you want to change that. You want to set me free. You want to heal that. You want to work deeply. And so, Lord, it's not that person who's the problem. It's that I am not passing the test in the way that I ought to be. Help me, Lord. Help me. See, when I'm beaten on, when I'm badgered or battered or bloodied or bruised, what happens is it reveals who I really am, what's going on in the inside of me. I don't know what I really am or what's going on inside of me until I'm beaten up and I get to see what flows out. Is it blood and water? redemption and refreshment? Or is it vinegar, bitterness, anger? Oh Lord, I can see that I am bitter, I'm angry, I'm grumpy, I'm hard-hearted. I can see that person who is beating on me, I see what flows out from me is vinegar, it's not water. Lord, okay, I understand this is important, this beating I'm going through, this beating I'm putting up with, that it might be corrected. Finally, and we're done, number 7. The final thing he said to make a bad day a good one. After he said it's finished, the test is over, the price is paid, the work is complete, he said that day, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Father, I'm going to put this whole matter in your hands. I'm going to let go of it, and I'm going to let you have it. And Jesus commended his spirit right then into the Father's hands. What a good day it is for me when I finally get to that point in the midst of my suffering, so to speak, or my trial, whatever it might be, when I say, Father, I'm going to leave that with you. I'm going to take my hands off. I'm not going to try and straighten her out or straighten him out or deal with their problem. I'm going to say, Father, I commit them into your hand. I commit my soul into your hand. I commit this issue into your hand. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. And they were surprised that day when they came to the cross where he was hanging that he had died so quickly. They were blown away. He's already dead? They came to break his legs, to hurry it along, but he was already gone. See, here's the thing. The sooner he died, the sooner he would be resurrected. The sooner he let go, the sooner he would come back a resurrected Savior. And when I'm getting beat up, I've got to let it go. Until I let it go and place it in God's hands, I'm going to prevent Easter Sunday, the resurrection, from happening. But if I let it go, when I let it go, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. I give this whole thing, my life, the whole deal to you. Then I can race towards the resurrection miracle. But it won't happen until I do. You rebels, must we fetch water? Bang, bang, bang. Actually, only two bangs. Dramatic license there with three. And the rock said, huh, so, you're beating on me, eh? Well, I'm cutting you off. That's it. No water for me. If that's the way you're going to treat me, the rock of your salvation, forget it. Be dry and die. Is that what happened? The rock gave forth its water anyway, to Moses, to Aaron, to the congregation. It's Jesus. Follow that example. Well, if he's going to treat me that way, he's getting nothing from me today, I guarantee that. If she's going to treat me that way, well, you watch and see what I'll do. Man, it's going to be dry for her. You bet you. Or will we say, I'm not going to have a fried day. It's going to be a good day. I'm going to do what Jesus did. I'm going to pray for that person. I'm going to think about heaven. I'm going to help out the family. I'm going to go to the water of the Word and the table of the Lord with expectancy. I'm going to realize what people that don't know Him live in continually. My God, why hast Thou forsaken me? And I'm going to pass the test so that the test will pass. It is finished. The price is paid. The work is done. And I'm going to let it go right now. And I'm going to leave it with You, Lord. I'm going to commit it into Your hands. That's the way to have a good day when bad things happen. That's the way. One last issue and we'll be done. You may say, well, John, even if I agree with that in theory, and you may say, I'm not sure I do, but even if I did, that's still a pretty tall order for a person to let things go and pray for people that are beating on you and all the rest. Here's the kicker. Here's the thing you got to know. Jesus Christ, the rock that was smitten, rose again, and now He's living, and He will live that life through you. It's Christ in you, the rock that was smitten, who gave refreshment to those that were complaining and those that were losing their temper and beating and all the rest. That same Christ lives in me. That's the good news. I'm not talking about seven steps to changing your personality. I'm talking about letting Jesus be Jesus in and through you. He lives in you. This is the way He works. This is what He does. This is what He will do through me if I allow Him to. For He is the same yesterday, the rock in the wilderness, the one on the cross of Calvary. Today, He lives in me. He's here with us and forever on through eternity. It's Christ in us. And today, I can pray in this amphitheater and say, Lord, live Your life through me. I can see what You want to do. I can see what You did do. And now, Lord, I'm giving You permission to do it through me. And I will respond to that whisper when You say, pray for that person. Think about heaven. Refresh him, refresh him, refresh him. I will just say, okay, Lord, I'll let You live through me. I'll just say, okay, when You whisper in my ear what I ought to do when people beat me, even as they beat you. Hey, may this study give you a whole new understanding of the bumper sticker, have a good day. May you truly have a good day. No matter what beatings come your way, you truly, I truly, we truly can have a good day. Let Christ live through us, doing the same things He did at Calvary, the same provision of refreshment He gave in the wilderness in Numbers chapter 20. Christ in you, the hope of glory. Let's pray. Father, how lost I would be, how confused we would be if it wasn't for Jesus Christ showing us how life is to be lived and then providing forgiveness for our many failings by shedding His own blood for us. And now, Father, I thank You that not only am I forgiven, that we are forgiven, but that You want to set us free to live in a whole other dimension by having Your Son, by His Spirit, live through us. And that's what we desire today. Oh, Father, that Your Son, by His Spirit, would live through our lives each day. Even the hard days, the dark days, the difficult ones. Father, bless the Applegate family. I know there's people sitting here right now who have been beaten on, even this past week, or maybe this past day. Father, I pray that this word would become real to them in a very practical and impacting way. I pray, Father, for those that are bruised and battered, that, Lord, they would not be blue and down and defeated, but might understand, even as we've considered these things this hour, what is your way and your plan and your resurrection power. Bless the folks, Father, who are beat up today. May it be a good Sunday for them. And for those that are doing well, but tomorrow you already know what's coming down the pike, what's around the next bend, I pray that we would not forget the example of Christ, Father, but that we might embrace and refresh people, even as He did and does and always will. Father, may Jesus live through us here at the fellowship, through your people. Help us, Lord. We're aware of our shortcomings. We're aware of our failures. We're aware of our inconsistencies and our foibles. So we come to this amphitheater today and say, Lord, have your way. Search our hearts. Direct our steps. Have your way. In the name of Jesus, we do pray. Amen.